a major breakthrough.
At long last, I can announce a ceasefire and a hostage deal has been reached between Israel and Hamas.
So now what happens?
So best case scenario, what comes next is that this deal is implemented without any hitches.
Today is Wednesday, January 15th, and this is The Issue from VOA.
I'm Scott Walterman.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
More than 15 months of conflict that began with Hezbollah's brutal massacre on October the 7th. More than 15 months of terror for the hostages, their families, the Israeli people. More than 15 months of suffering by the innocent people of Gaza. Fighting in Gaza will stop, and soon the hostages will return home to their families.
Speaking alongside Vice President Kamala Harris and Secretary of State Antony Blinken, President Joe Biden with a hopeful message announcing the breakthrough in his final full week in office.
Thousands of joyful Palestinians in Gaza on hearing the announcement of the deal.
While families and friends of Hamas-held hostages rejoiced in Tel Aviv.
It's very exciting that the hostages are finally coming back home.
Been waiting so long for our hostages to finally come home, praying, hoping.
The long-sought Gaza ceasefire for hostages deal emerged at the end of intense negotiations in Doha, brokered by the U.S., Egyptian, and Qatari diplomats who persuaded Israel and Hamas finally to conclude the agreement.
A senior Biden administration official also credited the presence of President-elect Donald Trump's incoming Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff, as being critical to reaching the agreement.
Biden said this now clears the way for a better future in the Middle East.
And there's a genuine opportunities for a new future. In Lebanon, there's an opportunity for a future, free from the grip of Hezbollah. In Syria, a future free from the tyranny of Assad, and for the Palestinian people, a credible pathway to a state of their own, and for the region, a future of normalization, integration.
Well, Scott, I think everyone is cautiously optimistic that this will hold because it has caused so many people on both sides to suffer, and I know everyone around the world is watching to hope that this will actually happen. It's sort of like you've waited so long and is it too good to be true kind of thing.
Well, it has certainly changed the landscape in and around the region. It didn't just affect Israel and Hamas, Israel and Gaza. Everywhere from the West Bank to Lebanon was touched by this war and is a completely different landscape now.
The deal is supposed to take effect on Sunday, and obviously there are still a lot of details yet to come out.
We still don't know everything, but for more on what is known, we're joined by Brian Katulis, Senior Fellow for U.S. Foreign Policy at the Middle East Institute.
Thanks for being with us on this late breaking news today. This is something that a lot of people have waited a long time to hear. We don't know a lot yet, but why do you think this is happening now?
I think for two main reasons. One, Hamas has suffered so much devastating losses over the last 6 months that it really was in a position that it needed to make some sort of deal in order to ensure its survival. So I think that's one key factor. I think a second factor is that the regional landscape has become much more favorable for Israel's security with the elimination of, or at least the end of the conflict with Hezbollah for now in Lebanon, and the removal of the Assad regime and Iran at its weakest point since the Islamic Republic came to power. I think the third factor is just the transition here in the United States. The way I see this deal, the three phases and the framework, it's actually quite similar to what President Biden outlined in the spring of last year. It took a long time for diplomats in Qatar and Egypt working with the United States to get to this point. It took those changed circumstances in the region. But I also think the confluence of events with America's transition from Biden to Trump also was probably a motivating factor as well. This deal, if it were a baby, looks a lot like Joe Biden. It has his features and things like this. But I think it's fair to say that Trump coming into office and the question marks and uncertainty and some of the statements he made may have actually focused the minds of some of the key actors in this conflict and helped produce this deal, helped father this deal in a sense.
Do you think that that's true for both Israel and Hamas?
Right now, I think it's uncertain to say because we don't know the full story of what happened behind the scenes. The partial story that we know is that both the Biden administration and representatives from the incoming Trump administration took part in recent weeks in these discussions. So whatever rancorous divisions we have in our politics on a lot of things, and no matter what Trump says or does on social media, there's a certain pragmatism that led Jake Sullivan, Biden's national security advisor, to work closely with Michael Waltz, Trump's incoming national security advisor, on this. And as I understand it, there was some engagement and involvement of some of the people Trump has named for his Middle East team. So I think in a real sense, that unique moment, the fact that big question marks to what Trump will actually do in the region, building upon what framework that Biden was working within, actually helped produce all of that. And that's a unique, interesting thing to think about.
So what do we know? I know this isn't, it hasn't all fleshed out, but what do we know are the main points in the deal? And of course, we know a lot of people are anxious to hear about the hostage release and the possible timeline for all that.
Yeah, it's a three-phase deal. Each of the three phases is marked in 42 days. The key components of the first phase would be a graduated release of some of the hostages, starting with women and children, because Hamas does continue to hold children, and some of the elderly. And in that phase also would be an increase of humanitarian aid. A key part of that first phase also is decreasing but not eliminating the Israeli security presence inside of Gaza. It's quite detailed from at least what I've seen, and I want to highlight, because it's so early, I've not yet seen a confirmed text, so it's hard to comment on that without having confirmation. So that first phase, I think, is quite extensive. The second and third phase build on the earlier moves and essentially outline a plan for releases of further hostages. I should say in the first phase, there's also releases of Palestinian prisoners held by Israel. So the formula is not that different, as I said, from what Biden mapped out in the late spring of 2024. But the real challenge here will be the implementation of it, because there are a lot of spoilers, both within Gaza and different camps inside of Gaza beyond Hamas, including Islamic Jihad. There's spoilers potentially in the Israeli government and people in the right wing who don't want there to be any removal of Israeli troops from Gaza. And there's potential spoilers in the region. So the period January essentially through May of the implementation of this deal, as it's outlined, will be a rocky one, because as we've seen, a lot can happen in just 3-4 months time in the Middle East.
And it's not an end to the war, right? It's just a ceasefire.
Well, yeah, that's true. And I think that's for a number of different reasons. We call it a war, and it is a devastating war that's killed tens of thousands of Palestinians and thousands of Israelis. But given the nature of the different groups, and I think part of the reason why it's a ceasefire as opposed to some sort of peace agreement or formal end of the war, is that Israel does not recognize Hamas as a terrorist organization, nor does U.S. policy. Will it deal directly with Hamas? The U.S. has dealt indirectly via Qatar and Egypt. So this is not necessarily a full end to the hostilities, and in part because of the nature of the conflict between these two entities, Hamas and Israel. They don't recognize each other. They want to destroy each other, and it may be the best that you could get at this moment.
So what would come next?
The key question, that's the key question, and what will come next is the implementation of this. And hopefully there won't be any hiccups or any problems in the implementation. But I suspect, as we've seen, you know, before when I lived in the West Bank and Gaza Strip in the 1990s, there were all sorts of graduated and phased plans of part of the Oslo process that never came to fruition, in part because of the spoiler effect. So best case scenario, what comes next is that this deal is implemented without any hitches. And I hope that's what happens. And I hope it then produces a more constructive environment for a pathway to a two-state solution, as Secretary of State Anthony Blinken has outlined and President Biden. I hope that pathway produces Israel-Saudi normalization accord, as President Trump, incoming President Trump, wants to produce. So that's the best case scenario. Worst case scenario is that this deal, this baby, I call it, it could be stillborn, just because there are a number of different actors that might want to kill it in the crib. And there could be just a partial implementation with some of the hostages coming out. You could get stuck in one phase versus the next, because later phases would have the release of other types of Israeli hostages that are part of the Israeli military. And those, based on historical experience, those are harder to actually get the release for. And the price often goes up in those negotiations. So nothing is ever set in stone in the Middle East in deals like this.
So let's say the ceasefire holds, the deal stays on track. Let's be completely optimistic. Where do we go from here? Who takes control of Gaza? What does Israel really want from the Palestinians? What do the Palestinians want aside from statehood?
Well, I think the Palestinians I talk to regularly in Gaza, to answer your third question first, is they want basic security, food, decency, a return to kids going to school, things like this. So statehood is a long way off from the practical considerations of what Palestinians want. I think most immediately on who, and it's a very important good question, which is not fully answered by what I read in this, again, early reporting on this deal, is there's not a clear phased plan on how or who will control security for the people of Gaza and maintain the security situation. That's a key gap. What the first phase envisions is a pullback of Israeli troops that's graduated, but still they would be inside Gaza, but outside of population centers. The drafts that I saw actually had quite a lot of detail going down to the street level of where Israeli security presence would be. But if you pull that back, there's a key question of who will fill that in. And the basic ideas that people have discussed, including Secretary Blinken, I saw him yesterday. I went to a speech in Washington where there has been planning about how Palestinian authority security forces might be brought into some of these areas. Perhaps even some Arab forces from some of the countries that are neighboring Israel, they've committed privately to actually come in at some in the right scenario. So that's a real tricky question, because if you've seen in the last few months chaos erupting in parts of Gaza that have not been governed by any authority, and if anything, governed by criminal gangs. So that's one of the places where it could really fall apart. I think Israel is divided on what it wants. Some Israelis want there to be some clear pathway to separation from the Palestinians. There's not much enthusiasm for a Palestinian state amongst Israelis. There are other Israelis more to the right of the spectrum who essentially want Israel not to leave. And this is some of the controversy and the hitches I think Prime Minister Netanyahu has seen in his own coalition. Some of the more extremist right-wing voices essentially saying that we should reoccupy Gaza and send Israeli settlers back. So you've got inside of Gaza this potential for further chaos, inside of Israel, sharp divisions, and a lot of, you know, challenging moments ahead in the implementation of this deal.
It's so complex, the whole situation between the Israelis and Palestinians in Gaza. And And I would imagine another big question that may not be able to be answered either is rebuilding, because you mentioned kids going to school. The schools are destroyed. There's, you know, it's basically flattened. So who pays for that? How do they even begin to rebuild? I mean, that just seems like an open question.
Yeah, it's one that the World Bank and others, I've been involved in exercises that I've gathered together with experts with Rockefeller Foundation that have mapped potential plans out. The bottom line is that this is going to take tens of billions of dollars over many, many years. This is not what we're talking about in this deal is essentially a four-month deal that is a ceasefire deal. It does hint at sort of longer-term plans and things like this, but there's nothing at all that ties the parties to those longer-term plans. And those plans mostly center around the idea that wealthy Arab Gulf nations would actually underwrite the reconstruction of Gaza. But understand what we're talking about here. We're talking about the devastation of more than a year and a half will take, in my view, at least a decade to fully recover from and reconstruct. It could come more quickly, but we're talking to a very densely populated area, most of the buildings in most neighborhoods destroyed. So this is a long-term venture. It's one that I don't expect under a Trump administration. He would actually be saying U.S. taxpayers should support financially. I'd be surprised if anyone in Israel would do. So that's where it all comes down to what the international community, the World Bank, as well as importantly, I think the Arab Gulf states will be expected to fund in terms of the long term. But the key point here is this is a very long term venture.
Hmm. Thanks so much for your time, perspective, info.
Yeah, good talking to you. Yeah, all right, we'll see you.
Thanks so much, Brian. That was Brian Katulis, Senior Fellow for U.S. Foreign Policy at the Middle East Institute.
He's not wrong about the reconstruction of Gaza. It is so completely destroyed. I think he said a decade. I think that's optimistic.
Right. And then that, of course, still leaves open a lot of questions. First, the deal has to go through. It has to, you know, all the phases have to go through. And then
You got to figure out who's going to run the new Gaza.
Right. Yeah. And as he said, you know, a lot of questions on.
And who's going to pay for
it? Who's going to pay for it? All right. Well, you've been listening to The Issue from The Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for joining us.
You can follow The Issue on X, Blue Sky, and Facebook at VOA The Issue. And to get news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, check out our website, voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Lori London. We will chat with you tomorrow.